Take off your jacket, because it's time to get deep under the covers with a loose read.
That's correct. It's time for loose reads. Thanks to our friends at Time Out. Kia ora City, how are you?
Morena, morena, Rosetta. I'm really well. How are you?
I'm good. Thanks for coming up. I'm excited to talk some books.
Yeah, book time.
Book time. We've got a memoir today, haven't we?
Yeah, this is like my second memoir in a row, which is really funny because I feel like up until now in like my 5+ years of doing loose reads, I've reviewed like 0 memoirs.
Oh, wow. Okay.
I think...
Trending at the moment, maybe.
Yeah. Or like, I think... I think sometimes I have like a little bit of like an aversion to it. I think sometimes like memoirs can be like super solipsistic, and I think... you know, I'm not saying like Joan Didion's style is the only way to write a memoir, but I do think that like some of that distance between like you, like the subject and the person writing it, is really important. And you'll see with like some of the, I guess, scandals with like other memoirs that have come up, like James Frey's A Million Little Pieces, and also currently with Ray Norwin's The Salt Path, is like people can be, it's always like one version of the truth. And like, yeah, I think a lot of the time what we choose to hide is like not super important, but sometimes it is really important to the story. But yeah, I think that like Yiyun Lee's book that I reviewed last time, and Mary McCarthy's, it's like it can be like a painful sort of like clear-eyed look at yourself and your life. And Memoirs of a Catholic Girlhood by Mary McCarthy is very much sort of like, it's like funny and punchy, but it also kind of looks at undoing some of like the mythology around like her family and herself that she sort of grew up with. So I think she does do the hard work of like looking at the sort of uglier or more difficult to contend with parts of like your life or your history. So for anyone who's unfamiliar, Mary McCarthy was a really well-known writer and apparently a super harsh literary critic of like the 50s and 60s, and sort of came to fame in that era for writing like the scathing review of J.D. Salinger's Catcher in the Rye.
Right, okay.
But was also, yeah, really well-known a bit later for her novels, The Company She Keeps and The Group. And I loved The Group. I read it like maybe last year for the first time, grabbed a copy from Hard to Find, great secondhand bookstore. And it's sort of about these like this group of 4 Vassar students, all women, who are sort of like friends but also in deep competition with one another. And it sort of looks at like the sometimes hierarchical nature of female friendships. And yeah, so she's got like a very, I wouldn't necessarily call her harsh, but she's definitely got this kind of wiry sort of...
Take no prisoners.
Yeah, exactly. Take no prisoners. Don't shy away from like portraying like the uglier sort of parts of... womanhood, which I think like in the 60s was like particularly radical. Like after that super, you know, an era of like the 50s where there's like this very conservative expectation of how women be, to unearth that kind of uglier side, I think was like really shocking at the time that it was released. So Fitzcarraldo has decided to publish her memoirs, which, yeah, it's like pretty short. I feel like it's like quite fast to get through. And the foreword's by Colm Tóibín, another famed Catholic, I guess. And so she was born in 1912. She was like the eldest of 4 children. And her father's side is like deeply devout sort of Irish Catholics, and she sort of she describes like all the women in the family as being sort of like these dowdy sort of you know, strict, rigorous women, and the men as being sort of like handsome and devilishly good looking but completely hopeless.
Classic.
Yeah, so classic. And I think this also kind of describes, like, yeah, this, it very much encompasses what her father's like, who she sort of grows up adoring as a kid. And he's sort of described as like this, someone who like really went, I think, like one of the few who, even into adulthood, of this sort of like devout Irish Catholic family, really went against the grain. He was like this sort of hopeless romantic with quite liberal values, the first in his family ever to vote for a Democrat, but also just like an incredibly kind of like, just had this real ineptitude around money. Like, she sort of talked about how, you know, he was like a lawyer who spent less time at the office and more time with his kids, which I thought was like real sweet and endearing. Like, he's like a very early stay-at-home dad. Like,
wow.
Yeah.
That's pretty progressive for the 60s.
Pretty progressive. And she sort of talks about how, like, yeah, he kind of has, like, yeah, such a romantic spirit, and all he sort of wants to do is, like, indulge in all the pleasures in life, which I think as a kid is so exciting. And, of course, you, like, create all this mythology around, like, this person who feels larger than life and is buying you, like she says in here, like, diamond rings from when your hands are, like, too small to fit in any, and, like, you know, these kind of ermine fur musks and stuff, muffs. And, yeah, she's, like, very much sort of pampered. And her mother is also, like, quite a romantic spirit, or at least, like, tolerates, like, her father's kind of romance. And she talks about how, like, her mum's side of the family, who's sort of like East Coast Jewish background, just had this constant feeling that he was so in love with life and all the beauty in it that he was going to basically run the family into the ground as a result, which I guess in a way sort of happens. So her mother and father die quite early into their childhood, and they're sort of rehomed in their grandmother and grandfather's house, and it's like the polar opposite of the household that they grew up in, like, totally devoid of love. Like, her grandmother is like a real harsh, strict woman. She describes her as like a really bad hostess, like, like, you know, will invite people over, offer them nothing to eat, and thinks that they should be lucky to be, you know, in the pleasure of her company, I guess. And so, yeah, she sort of talks about how, like, there's this real whirlwind of change in their lives, and rather than having these sort of loving loving parents that they grew up with, they now have like this grandmother who's like so sort of such a disciplinarian. She talks about how, you know, when she's sleeping at night, her grandmother will like come into the room, and if she's like got her mouth open, will like tape her mouth shut. And there's like no mouth breathing in my house. Yeah.
That's
crack up. Yeah, totally. And then, yeah, so I guess like all of this early stuff becomes like fodder for her talking about like her own relationship to religion. And her real, like, she sort of comes around, she talks about how, like, you know, actually in school, like, she felt like she had this real relationship with God that wasn't like inspired out of you know, rule following or trying to be a good Catholic. It was so much more that she genuinely believed that there was a righteous God, and she believed in, like, you know, living devoutly. But then the thing that really changed her feelings about that is, like, before her first communion, she has like a sip of water and feels like, you know, pangs of Catholic guilt, because you're meant to be a completely empty vessel for the communion. Right. And she talks about how, like, yeah, she's like wrecked with all this guilt before she takes the communion wine and wafer, and then feels like absolute, like, there's no punishment. There's nothing that comes of her filling the vessel before right. it's due. And all of these kind of, yeah, and then her grandmother's sort of, like, horrific, I don't know, she doesn't, like, describe it as abuse in the book, but having your mouth taped shut, being, you know, locked in your room for, like, hours and hours on end, all of that sort of, like, harsh disciplinarian stuff, it definitely feels like abuse. And, you know, how that, and seeing, like, the unhappiness that it invoked, not only in the kids who are on the receiving end, but also in her grandmother herself, who she was like, you know, religion brought her no joy, no hope, showed like an ugliness to like life that she thought, like, you know, what kind of righteous God would want us to live this way, really. It talks about that. It talks about, like, you know, her and her brother sort of become the only successful children of the four in the family, and the other two sort of live like in sort of destitution and poverty. Her brother was like a theater actor who also went on to be like a television actor. And yeah, she sort of talks, yeah, it's like so much a memoir about religion and about the confines of religion and the way that someone might come back to like an understanding maybe of some kind of spirituality that's like devoid of orthodoxy. And then it's also about, like, you know, a person who's like so much shaped by literature and writing. And she does sort of talk about, like, you know, a lot of the books that she hated, which is like really fun to read. I love when reading when people are like a little bit scathing. And, you know, she is the one thing that her Catholic upbringing really brings her to is like a deep sort of reverence for the truth. And all of the writers, like including like Salinger, and you know, she just has such a, it kind of leads her to being a reviewer who hates the idea of someone writing from like a place of self-indulgence or maybe even like lying, which to me was like, yeah, that really kind of resonated with me a little bit, I guess, because yeah, it felt to me exactly the reason why I would, if I didn't know if it was Mary McCarthy, like why I avoid memoirs personally, you know? But yeah, it's like,
it's the unreliable narrator sort of thing.
Yeah, totally. And like, or like, yeah, wanting to write about things from like maybe a more mythological space and maybe being less interested in showing like all the different less lovely facets of life and relationships and yeah, tragedy. So yeah, it's like it's got like so many gems. It's like really given me a reading list, if anything. I've got like Elizabeth Hardwick and, you know, some Hannah Arendt books that I didn't know about at the time on my list. It's also like, yeah, what happens to people as a result of orthodoxy, and she sort of shows, you know, a few different sides of that coin. The people who like grow up with it, who sort of continue or run towards it, or it completely shapes their lives thereafter. And also, I guess, the people who learn to resist that orthodoxy and what life looks like after. And yeah, the Catholic guilt that whether you shun your upbringing or not sort of lingers with you. Yeah, it's such a fascinating and funny and clever and punchy memoir. I highly, highly recommend it.
If you're grappling with your Catholic guilt, talking to you, Dad, then Memories of a Catholic Girlhood by Mary McCarthy might be for you. And it's on sale at Time Out Now, yeah?
On sale at Time Out Now, yeah.
Yeah, cool. Thank you so much, Suri.
Thank you, Rosetta.
Thank you to Time Out. We'll catch you next week.
Talk soon. Bye.
That was Loose Reads.